It is the Positive Chats Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Briggs, and joining us today on the Positive Chats Podcast is Thomas Kersting. He is the author of Raising Healthy Teenagers, Equipping Your Child to Navigate the Pitfalls and Dangers of Teen Life. Thomas, welcome to the Positive Chats Podcast. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So did you ever think about entitling this book Mission Impossible?
I've been fighting this mission for years. Trust me, lecturing all over the country, writing books, trying to really help parents understand what's going on in the world and do something about it.
See, now you have extra. Now we were chatting off the air, and I have three teenage boys at home and a little girl, and so I'm right here, right? I'm right here dealing this with you. But you have the extra pressure, right? Because you're supposed to be the expert. So when your kids mess up, it's like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, no, you better believe I have the extra pressure, especially for my kids. You know, like the book prior to this was called Disconnected, you know, all about technology, the impact of mental health and so forth. So obviously my kids were like the last ones to get smartphones, and you know, they gave me hell for that, but it seems to have paid off to this point at least.
Yeah, we heard that because, you know, we have a rule, they got to be, you know, nothing until they're 13, and then they, you know, get limited, and so they're all complaining because all their friends are like, my daughter's already counting down. She goes, now how many more years till I get mine? It's like, well, you got a little ways to go yet. So
yeah, and you said your daughter's 9, right?
Yeah.
So what's crazy, I just did a lecture last night, actually. I lecture all over the country. And, you know, if I ask parents in the audience, hey, do you think it's smart for an 11-year-old to have a smartphone? Nobody ever raises their hand, right?
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is the average age is like 10 and a half years old. So we all know it's a bad idea, but we do it anyway.
Yeah. You know, and it, look, I mean, it's our initial one was, you know, people were at practices and, you know, getting in contact with us, and there is a benefit to it, but, you know, it's the challenge of moderating that and what are they looking at, and it's just part of raising healthy teenagers, right? It's just one of the many things we have to navigate out there.
Exactly. Like, so, you know, like technology, I mean, I do talk about technology quite a bit. The book really goes into a lot of different things that kids are confronted with today, you know, from fear. Everybody's walking on eggshells. We have a childhood obesity epidemic. Kids nowadays, you know, like particularly like teenagers and those in their 20s, you know, actually think that marijuana is harmless, even though like the THC level is like 90% in today's marijuana. And we have cannabis induced psychosis episodes, all this crazy stuff. So it's really, I'm just trying to like really pinpoint for parents all these obstacles, you know, that our children are confronted with, and provide them, you know, some strategies and tips, you know, to really help sort of navigate this minefield.
So we think about this as parents, you know, and obviously we want to raise our kids well. We want them to be healthy. We want them to grow and be responsible adults and make good decisions. But just thinking about the things kids have to navigate, as opposed to when you and I were growing up, we're probably about the same generation, and you know, there was enough out there that we had to mess with, but it seems like there's exponentially more that they're dealing with than that what we were.
So check this out. Remember Jaws?
Yes.
All right. So that movie came out, I think it was like 1975. People literally would not go in the ocean, right? 50 years later, I still don't go in the ocean. From Jaws. So like this 2-hour movie, think about the imprint that can have on your brain. And now think about all of the content that kids, adults, and everybody are consuming all day long, because everything is captured on camera nowadays. So
right.
These violent acts, you know, murders, muggings, carjackings. And you have to wonder, you have to question, all right, so you see everybody sort of walking around, you know, on eggshells in society with eyes in the back of their head. Is it because society is really that much dangerous, that much more dangerous? Or is it just because everything that happens we now see?
You know, it's funny. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were referencing this guy who wrote this book called, I think it was called Fear or something. But it was all about how, you know, he looked around his suburban neighborhood and saw all these people were afraid of all these things and kind of irrational fears, like, you know, like police shootings of unarmed people, you know, and they're like, you ask people, how many times has that happened? And they'll say, like, some people said like 10,000. Well, there's not like 10,000 murders in America. The actual answer for like 2021 was 7, right? But everybody's guessing like 200, 1,000, 10,000, which is the number of murders of the entire country. It's like, you're right, because we see everything where we didn't used to. We're like, ah!
You know, think about the, like, you know, I live out in the burbs outside of New York City, New Jersey, right? If you're driving around during like, you know, more school commutes and stuff, you see, you know, the moms in the SUVs parked at the end of the road, while they're waiting for the school bus to come instead of the kid walking two blocks, right? And the reason for that is because there's this actual fear, like, oh my God, I can't let my kid walk to school because, you know, of all these kidnappings.
Yeah.
But what people realize is that kidnappings are at an historic all-time low. It's just that now if there's a kidnapping in the middle of rural Mississippi, you now know about it in 5 minutes on your phone, where in the past you wouldn't, and it just imprints into your mind.
Yeah, and the immediate thought is, oh, another kid's been taken. Like, that's the third one this week, right? And it's not. And I do that too. All right, my pet peeve, I'm in the drop-off line at school. It's literally 10 feet from where you drop your kid off to where they walk in, and people wait until their kid gets all the way in before they pull up. I'm like, nothing's going to happen in the 10 feet.
Exactly, yeah. And talking about school drop-offs, you know, another big thing I talk about a lot too is, you know, with parents, like the most important thing for their children's mental well-being, believe it or not, is the relationship between parent and child. And you know, households today are, you know, we call them, you know, we use the word family, but it's more like four individuals that live under the same roof and are staring at a screen. Mm-hmm. And if you ever look in a rearview mirror, anybody listening, if you have kids, just look in the rearview mirror of your car when you're dropping your kid off, or look in the passenger seat, and you'll see it's the same exact thing every time. It's the kid staring down at the phone. Yeah. So even those 5 minute rides to school are like really fertile ground 180 times a year, you know, to really connect with your kids. So, you know, anybody listening right now, you know, make sure your kid isn't on that phone while you're driving them to school, because that's like really important dialogue that you're missing out on.
So, and you talk about, by the way, I mean, you talk about different chapters. One of them is fear-filled nation. You talk about these kind of irrational fears that we have, you know. Now, there are things that we should be concerned about, but there's a lot of things that we're overly afraid of. You talk about mental freedom, social nutrition, behavior and conduct issues, substance abuse, obesity and body image, school and learning, and then college admission pressure and debt, which I just had my 18-year-old just was taking his ACTs, has been stressed out all week about these ACTs, and what if I don't get into college, and what if I get, you know, and I got to score, you know, like a this and that, and, you know, I'm like, dude, you're not going to Harvard, okay? I've seen your grade card. You're not going to Harvard, so relax, right? It doesn't mean you can't go to a college.
Yeah, it's like, you know, colleges, you know, they're businesses, you know, they are businesses. So it's kind of like, you know, why would somebody go spend $500 on a pair of Jordans, right? Are you going to dunk now because you have Jordans? No. And it's like colleges have kind of sold us this idea that, you know, these blue chip colleges, if you get accepted, you know, this is where you must go, right? But, you know, what about the economical component of that? So private schools are about $80,000 a year. And there's no, you don't even need to show any way of paying that loan back that you get from the federal government at $80,000 a year. And yet we'll send our kids to these, you know, to these colleges. And oftentimes they may even come out with some degree that doesn't really hold any sort of a job related to it. Now they have $300,000+ in debt. And we have, as a result of that, we have a $1.75 trillion student loan deficit in the United States.
Yeah, and you know, like, if you're walking out of there with a studies degree, you're not walking out of there with anything that has any real economic value, right? I mean, and look, I say that as someone, I've got a master's degree, I'm a pastor, you know, I'm working here at the radio station, and I know there's guys who are welders who make five times what I do, and they never went to college, right? You don't have to go to college to have a great career, to provide for your family, to earn a great living.
That's another component. You really don't. And believe it or not, a lot of people don't realize this. So many kids nowadays, they're so tech savvy, and something like computer science is like a really, really big field that people are going into. So all these companies, Amazon, Facebook, the big tech companies, if you're 18 years old or even 17 years old, and you're a whiz at coding and all that stuff, they're going to hire you. You don't need a college degree anymore to be hired by those companies. I have a friend that works for one of those companies and told me they don't even care if you have a college degree. We just want to see that you know how to do this stuff.
We have a family in our church. Their son's 17 years old. He was homeschooled, never spent a day in college, is got a job with some California company coding for them, and is making, you know, great money doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if college is something that you really want to do, it's definitely worthy of pursuing, but you know, like, I think about myself, I've done a lot of great things in my life that I'm proud of. I've achieved a lot, written books, lectures. I go on TV all the time. I got a, you know, I'm a licensed psychotherapist. And the college I went to, basically the small little college over here in New York, you know what the admissions requirements are for that college?
Hmm.
If they take your pulse, you're in. I did a lot, you know, and it was that's the only option I had. My parents didn't have any money. It was inexpensive. I commuted, and I just made, you know, and I'd be in the same place right now, Tommy, that I made in my life if I went to some fancy schmancy school.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I heard Thomas Sowell, great economist, once said, the great advantage of having a Harvard degree is never having to be impressed by anybody who says they have a Harvard degree. But you have a chapter on social nutrition. Now, some of these are fairly explanatory, you know, fear-filled nation, body image, things like that. What do you mean by social nutrition?
Yeah, so I actually call it social malnutrition, but the publisher wanted me to change it to social nutrition because it sounded a little more positive. You know, so what we have right now in our society is, and this is really, this pertains a lot to any parents that have younger kids right now, is play is down 70% in recent years. Mm. Right. So kids are spending somewhere between 9 and 10 hours a day on screens, and they're spending almost all of their time indoors. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, being outside and playing, every time a kid goes outside and plays, it activates something like 3,000 genes in the cortex part of their brain. And that's the part of the brain that shapes them socially. It's the part of the brain that teaches them how to handle adversity. So when our children's natural habitat is being outside, you know, playing with other kids and so forth. But we're not really doing that anymore, like previous generations. And that's where kids develop all of the skills that are necessary to really to be a social and emotional human being. And I think back to, you know, during the COVID lockdowns, I remember driving through my town in the main park, you know, it had that like yellow police tape around the park. And I'm like, you know, that's a crime scene, right? If a kid goes in there. And so instead, you know, what did our society do? We put them in solitary confinement in their bedrooms, where their bedroom became the place where they slept, it became their classroom, became their place of, you know, any kind of activities. And it's just not inherently good. And that's why we're seeing so many issues now, you know, unfolding with kids for, you know, with all the anxiety and depression and the lack of communication, social skills, and so forth. You know, humans are meant to be among one another, bottom line.
And, you know, I noticed that when my kids were young, they're always outside, their friends would come over, you know, they'd run around our yard and tear it up and all that kind of stuff, which is great, fine, you know, I'd rather have them in our yard than else place. And we do, you know, fire pits and have s'mores and have all the kids over. It was awesome. And it did, and I don't know if some of it was age, some of it was COVID, but there was that trend. We hit COVID, right? Everything locks down. And then it did kind of get to their mentalities, like, we can't go outside, it's COVID. I said, no, you can go outside. No, we can't be in the yard. No, you can be in the yard. You can walk down to the end of our street to the park and be there. It's okay. Well, what if somebody comes up? What if I don't have a mask? They were so paranoid about this. And we weren't like crazy in our house about this. I mean, we were, you know, but it really did have an effect on them and their mentality. And I've noticed that since then, it is harder to get them to go outside, right? Now, they have fun when they get out there. They enjoy it when that happens, but it really shifted, I think, a mentality in our young people.
Yeah, I remember when my son, his 17th birthday, which is, I guess, almost 3 years ago, right in the beginning of COVID, a bunch of his friends come driving down the street and they were like in their cars by themselves, you know, to do like a social distance birthday. And I know all these kids. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, a month later when I noticed that there weren't really any kids dropping dead from COVID. I told all of them, guys, get out of your car, come into the driveway. And not one of them hesitated. You know, they really wanted to do that. But to your point, you know, it's something I talk about called cocooning in that chapter. So think of it like this. You know, when a baby comes out of the mother's womb and it just freaks out and is crying and turns red and is like, you know, you know, that's because that womb was that baby's safe space. It's where it had become comfortable for 9 months. And now all of a sudden it enters into this foreign place and sets off the bells and whistles, the body's alarm system. That's kind of what's happened with COVID, with a lot of people, mainly kids, you know, went from being, you know, locked indoors for so long, that really became sort of in their brain, their comfort place. And now having to go back to what was once their comfort place, school, sports, and so forth, triggered similar reactions that baby coming out of the cocoon, coming out of the womb has, in the form of stress, anxiety, worry, and so forth.
And so do you think that feeds in? Because I noticed you put these, and I wonder if that was intentional. Social nutrition followed by fear-filled nation, the next chapter. I mean, was that intentional that you led from one to the other because of that?
So you blend them in, you know, chapters, and then, you know, just going into, you know, and the fear-filled nation, that, you know, what was everybody doing? I mean, you know, the screen time stuff has been going on since 2012, you know, the major mental health implications, which is when you know, smartphones came out. So this wasn't, you know, by any means caused by COVID, but COVID accelerated all this. So now you have everybody, you know, that's already been addicted to screens, particularly kids. And now they're home indoors and that's all they have is a screen. You know, so I don't even know what the hours per day were during COVID. Like the average is, like I said, about 9. It was probably like 15 hours a day. And what are we gobbling? What's our brain gobbling up? What are kids' brains gobbling up? You know, when they're not doing like school related stuff, yeah. Just useless videos and violence and this and that, just superficial stuff.
Well, and I even noticed in our house, like pre-COVID, we had like no technology Tuesdays, right? Nobody got on yet. We had pretty strict limits about hours and stuff. And then COVID hit. One, they're on all day with school. But then I was like, well, this is the only way we can see our friends. And like, okay, yeah, you know, I want them to see their friends. And so they get on and game with their friends and stuff because that was the only social interaction they had. And now since then, we came out of COVID and I realized we didn't go back, right? We didn't really go back to, okay, COVID's over. Let's start limiting these things. And it's kind of like, now I'm looking at it going, we kind of need to reset here, you know, because we never really did.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that because I noticed too is, you know, I have a private practice. I'm a psychotherapist. That's my profession. And, you know, so when COVID hit, remember that first 2 weeks where everybody had to just like lock down?
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. We all did, right? So I had to learn how to use Zoom, you know, to do sessions with people. So after the 2 week mark, I said to myself, you know what? I'm going back to my office. I'm a you know, an essential worker. And I'm like, I'm going in person. And surprisingly, the majority of my clients were like, yes, I want to come in person. You know, so I was just, you know, I sanitized and did all that stuff beforehand and never had a problem. And it was, and a lot of therapists are still doing virtual
because
they got comfortable doing that. Although it's okay, there's nothing like face-to-face having somebody in front of you.
Well, I mentioned I was a pastor. We had the same thing in our church. And I remember we were, you know, we went to Zoom initially because like everybody else, we weren't sure what was going on. And the debate was, well, when do we get back in person? And so we were all worried, like, well, we've got some older people in the congregation, and we really want to protect them and stuff.
Yeah.
And so we get together and start talking about it, and it was all the older people who said, no, we want to get back together. We're like, well, we're trying to keep you safe. They're like, ah, we've been through this stuff before. We're fine. Let's get back together. And we're like, okay.
That gritty generation, right?
Yeah, they're like, we have Hong Kong flu. We've been through this. This is no big deal, right? And because people want that, and we need that social interaction. And how much then, because you talk about behavior and conduct issues, so what are some of those behavior issues that we've seen in kids maybe rising out of that as a result of that? What are those challenges that, you know, as parents we're going to face, and how do we address those issues with our kids?
So it's interesting, Tommy. Last couple of years, what I noticed, something that I hadn't seen anywhere near this amount of, is oppositional defiant behavior.
Mm.
It's also known as oppositional defiant disorder. So when I was doing research for this book, I felt this was going to be an important chapter. It really hit me like a ton of bricks. So there's two things behind that, because there's this escalation in oppositional defiant behavior. I'm getting, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-olds, you know, freaking out, cursing at their parents, getting physical at times, right? And these are like, you know, come from good households. So when I was doing the research, it came down to two things. Number one, going back to what I talked about earlier, consuming all this violent stuff that you see online, right? That we see, you know, through social media. What happens, the more we see, the more we're exposed to anything, the more desensitized our brain becomes to it, and the more normalized it becomes, right? So that's part one. Number two is, all of the social media apps, video games, and all that stuff are intentionally directed towards the pleasure-seeking part of the brain that produces dopamine, right? So dopamine is that feel-good chemical. And it's also the chemical that's tied to every addiction, whether it's drugs or gambling. So all of this stuff, and our kids are spending like 8 to 9 hours a day, it's being directed to that part of their brain, and our kids are getting this never-ending dopamine drip, and they don't even know it's happening. So when the stimuli is removed, for example, in this case, the phone or the video game system, what is the ensuing reaction to that? Oppositional, defiant, basically a withdrawal, just like somebody who's coming off of drugs, they're going to freak out. So, yeah, so what parents need to do is, the best thing to do is really start dialing back. Like, technology isn't necessarily a bad thing. A glass of wine with dinner isn't a bad thing either, but 9 glasses of wine with dinner every night of the week, that's not the problem. So it's really about dialing that back and trying to create something called homeostasis in the brain, which is the brain's natural ability to balance out that dopamine.
And then you do talk about substance abuse. I'm thinking back to when we were kids. And, you know, the reports I've seen, and I'm asking you because I'm not sure where things are now. You know, I grew up, I'm kind of 80s was when I was in high school. you know, and I know there's a lot of concern about drinking and things like that. And then it seemed like that has, or at least for a while, was declining. We were actually seeing a decline in you know, teenage drinking and things like that. Where are we at? Did that continue? Is it raised? Is it just turned to other things? What's the accurate picture of how much substance abuse is going on and what substances are being abused? Is it different than when we were growing up? Where are we with that?
Yeah, well, so kids are still drinking, right? I'm dealing with that regularly at my office, right? But what's really changed is the mindset. Let me explain what I mean. So if I grab 10 kids off the street, 10 teenagers randomly, mm-hmm. like 10 or 15 years ago, and ask them, hey, marijuana, what are your thoughts on it? 9 out of 10 would say, oh, it's no good. If I grab 10 kids today, 9 out of 10 would say marijuana is harmless, okay? Mm-hmm. Which is the biggest lie there is. And the reason for that is because of legalization. Once states started legalizing marijuana, it created a mindset of, hey, this stuff is legal. I guess it's harmless.
You normalize it.
Yeah, what parents need to realize is that in 1990, that's the year I graduated high school, the THC level in marijuana was 3 to 5%. The THC level today is up to 90%.
Oh, my goodness.
And what we're seeing, so what people don't realize is right now, there are more individuals going to hospital emergency rooms for cannabis-induced psychotic episodes than for any other drugs. There are more people going to emergency rooms for marijuana than any other drug.
That's crazy, especially since the grocery store I go to, every time I walk in, you can smell nothing but, I call it the cannabis growers. I mean, it's apparently you have to get high to go grocery shopping anymore. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. And then we have this, you know, then we have this fentanyl epidemic. Mm-hmm. All that stuff pouring over the border. 110,000 people died last year from drug overdoses, 60-something percent from fentanyl. And most of the people didn't even know they were taking fentanyl because they laced this stuff. They lace other drugs with fentanyl. Right
now, what is the danger of fentanyl? Because it seems like a really deadly drug.
Yeah. So fentanyl. All right. Let me put it to you this way. So fentanyl, whatever they use to produce it, is made in China. Then it goes to Mexico, and then it's a synthetically created substance. It's really not even a cell. It's a poison, basically. Right. So fentanyl, like has a similar effect to an opiate, but it's 500 times more powerful than morphine. So if somebody, let's say a drug dealer has a bag of marijuana, right? It's like, imagine a salt shaker, okay? And they sprinkle some fentanyl in that marijuana, right? And, you know, the person doesn't even know it's there. It makes them more addicted. If they sprinkled one more shake on that, that could kill 1,000 people now. Wow. That's how powerful this stuff is.
So as parents, you know, what do we do? What are those signs we look for? How do we talk to our kids about this and keep them, you know, informed and away from this stuff?
No, you just hit the nail on the head. We have to talk to our kids about this. We have to have conversations with them. We have to, you know, we have to make them aware of some of the stuff that I just presented. You know, because these kids, they just, you know, they see everybody else doing it and they think, all right, well, so-and-so, it's not a big deal. We're all doing it. So we have to have, like, what I have a zero tolerance. That's the bottom line. I've told my daughter who's, you know, 16, thankfully, there's not, you know, nothing has happened with her. My son, who's 19, he's never had a sip of alcohol. He's in college. He's a great kid. And I tell my daughter, I say, if I ever catch you, you know, high or with marijuana or something, you're out. You're not allowed here. Now, do I really mean that? I'm not so sure, but I want her to think that. I want her to think that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? The threat is out there. The nuclear option.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking with Thomas Kersting. The book is Raising Healthy Teenagers, Equipping Your Child to Navigate the Pitfalls and Dangers of Teen Life. Thomas, there's a lot more we could talk about. We're probably going to have you. I'd love to have you back on to maybe talk about some more in this book because there's obviously a lot we didn't get to today. But if folks are interested in the book, if they would like to get a copy, interested in your other works, do you have a website or place they can go?
Yeah, my website is tomkersting.com. And one last thing. So if anybody, I don't know if you get any people out in Jersey, I'm doing a book signing at an independent bookstore in Northvale, the town I grew up in.
Okay.
That's tomorrow.
So we have listeners in all 50 states. So, yep, we got listeners out in Jersey.
Northvale, New Jersey, Books and Greetings.
Say it again. Where is that?
It's Northvale, New Jersey. It's a place called Books and Greetings tomorrow, Saturday at noon.
Okay. So there you go. If you're out in Jersey listening, you can meet Tom out there. And again, the book is called Raising Healthy Teenagers. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great talking with you again. We'd love to have you back on.
Oh, yeah, anytime. I appreciate you having me, Tommy. Be well. Have a great weekend.